In lesson 17, we've looked at chapters 6, 7, and 8 of Joshua. We looked at the fall of Jericho and found out that we don't trust stuff like Achan did. We briefly looked at the defeat at Ai. And on the second page, Achan's sin is exposed. We looked at that last week. And briefly looked at the fall of Ai after the sin was taken care of in Achan's family. And the people understood that they were to follow God's instructions. And so they... One of the points that was mentioned here in that fourth section is that when God told them to take Jericho, they were not to take anything as spoil, as we might call it. But Achan did. So that's why they couldn't take Ai the first time. But then after the second time, they were able to take Ai. Sin was no longer in the camp, and then, at that time, they could take things from the city of Ai as the spoils for victory, so to speak. The fifth section down there we didn't get to. Is there anything that we were looking at last week that you want to discuss that we didn't cover, or you had a question about in the first four sections of this? It's interesting about this renewal of the covenant. They have God destroyed Jericho and Ai, and now there's a pause in the conquering of the west side of the Jordan River, the conquering, I say. God does all the conquering, and there's a pause in the possession of it. And it says there in number 5 of the renewal of the covenant, after these initial battles, the Israelites paused to observe the command of Moses to gather at Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim to offer sacrifice and renew the covenant. Altar was built, and the blessings and the cursings of Deuteronomy were read to remind the people of their responsibility. Everybody know where Mount Ebal and Gerizim are? Before we show you a map. Now, if you have those maps with you, it's good to look at them. We handed some out at the very beginning of the study of Joshua. But let's read Joshua, the 8th chapter, and those verses that are mentioned there. Joshua 8, verse 30-35. At that time, Joshua built an altar to the Lord, the God of Israel, on Mount Ebal. Just as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had commanded the people of Israel, as it was written in the book of the law of Moses, quote, "An altar of uncut stones upon which no man has wielded an iron tool. They offered on it burnt offerings to the Lord and sacrificed peace offerings. And there in the presence of the people of Israel, he," that's Joshua, "wrote on the stones a copy of the law of Moses, which he had written. And all Israel," is that as far as I wanted to read? No. "And all Israel," verse 33, "sojourned, all Israel, sojourning as well as native-born, with their elders and officers and their judges, stood on the opposite sides of the ark before the Lord, before the Levitical priest who carried the ark of the covenant of the Lord, half of them in front of Mount Gerizim and half of them in the front of Mount Ebal, just as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had commanded at the first to bless the people of Israel. And afterward he read all the words of the law, the blessing and the curse, according to all that is written in the book of the law. There was not word of all that Moses commanded that Joshua did not read before all the assembly of Israel, and the women and the little ones and the sojourners who lived among them. So this is referring back, and we have here on the sheet Deuteronomy 27. And just for a second here, let's look at Deuteronomy 27, verse 1 through 8. So the people have taken Ai, and I'll look at them. We'll look at a map here on the slide in just a moment as to where Ai is in relation to Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. But in Deuteronomy 27, this, of course, is Moses speaking. And Deuteronomy 27, verse 1. Now Moses and the elders of Israel commanded the people, saying, keep the whole commandment that I command you today. And on the day you cross over the Jordan to the land that the Lord your God is giving you, you shall set up large stones and plaster them with plaster. And you shall write on them all the words of this law when you cross over to enter the land that the Lord your God has given you, a land flowing with milk and honey, as the Lord, the God of your fathers, has promised. And when you have crossed over the Jordan, you shall set up these stones concerning which I command you today on Mount Ebal, and you shall plaster them with plaster. And there you shall build an altar to the Lord your God, an altar of stones. You shall wield no iron tool on them. You shall build an altar to the Lord your God of uncut stones, and you shall offer burnt offerings on it to the Lord your God, and you shall sacrifice peace offerings and shall eat there, and you shall rejoice before the Lord your God, and you shall write on the stones all the words of this law very plainly. So that's the instructions that Moses gave to the people, which we read now in Joshua, that they are following them. We might, verse 9 and 10, let's read them too. I'd like to go on, but to other verses here in Deuteronomy, but we've studied it in the past. Then Moses and the Levitical priests, Deuteronomy 27, verse 9, then Moses and the Levitical priests said to all Israel, keep silent and hear, O Israel. This day you have become the people of the Lord your God. You shall therefore obey the voice of the Lord your God, keeping his commandments and his statutes, which I command you today. Now, we may get into some discussion of that passage and as well as Joshua, but let me refresh our minds here as to which one did you turn off, Brian? I had it up here and I forgot you put it down here. This is one of the outlines that we gave out at the beginning of our study. And it divides the book of Joshua into two sections, this over here, the 13 through 17, and this 1 through 12. And we are in this section here, Jericho, defeated Ai, victory at Ai, and the Gibeonites is in chapter 9. And we haven't gotten that far. But we're still in that period of time when they're going to be conquering their enemies, and chapter 10 will continue with that. This is a very simple map, much more simple than what we've handed out to you, and we've handed you several. And it's not all that clear, possibly, with the light here. But you see the Dead Sea right here. They started from Shittim to go over to Jericho, and God destroyed Jericho. Gilgal is more or less their headquarters, or where they're working from. And so they went to Gilgal over here from Shittim, and God destroyed Jericho. And then they went to Ai, defeated, and then conquered it. These red lines indicate where they're going on the conquering journey, so to speak. But if you go from Jericho to Ai, to Bethel, right here is Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. Shechem is in the middle there, or sits between the two, I should say, maybe be more clear. And I want to show you some slides of this area, actual slides of what it looks like today. But anyway, this is where Moses, as we read in Deuteronomy, told the people to go and read the blessings and the curses and to make an altar there. And Joshua builds the altar on Mount Ebal. And the people then stand at the foot of Mount Gerizim and the foot of Mount Ebal and hear those blessings and curses read. This is something that if you were up high in an airplane or a helicopter, and by the way, it's kind of difficult. I always think of Mount Ebal being over to the east and Mount Gerizim over to the west, but they're kind of north and south from each other. Gerizim a little bit west of Mount Ebal, but mostly south. So in this picture from the helicopter or the plane, we're kind of looking northwest. Here it's got them where it looks like east and west. If you take the maps, it's north and south and east and west, but that's not the way they're situated. So a little difficult to see here, Mount Ebal here, Mount Gerizim there, but from the base of each mountain, according to this, it's a mile. Then this is looking from on the ground to each one with, and there maybe you can see a little better that Mount Ebal where the curses are read and Mount Gerizim here, it doesn't look like there's a lot of space between them. Of course, this is a modern picture that's been built up since the days of Joshua and the people. Another viewpoint is you're standing a little closer to it, but it's a little bit of a valley here, and so people standing here and the people standing over here could hear the priest down in here reading the law and speaking to the people. I think I have one more. Yeah. This is a map, and what we're going to see, let's see, here's the Dead Sea, here's Jerusalem, and Mount Gerizim and Ebal up there. All of this here is, you've got these maps, are the places where they're going to go after they leave Mount Ebal and Gerizim. They're going to conquer some people down in here. Anyway, this is where the action is taking place in chapter eight, of Joshua. Any question? Although it's not in our study of Joshua, have you heard? Let me back up here. Yeah, there you go. You've heard of Shechem before? Do you know what several, I guess you could say, famous things went on here in this area? Besides the reading of the law, and Joshua setting up an altar here on Mount Ebal. Mo.
Where Jacob's sons went in and killed all the people of Shechem because of they violated his sister Dinah.
Okay. I had forgotten that one for the time being. That's fine. Anything else you can think of that happened to this area? Do you know where Joseph was buried? Where were Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and Sarah buried?
Hebron.
That's south of Jerusalem, about 12 or so miles. But Joseph was buried here. Okay, and before that, though, Abraham came here, and what did he do while he was there? He built an altar, Genesis the 12th chapter, and he pitched a tent there, but he didn't own anything in the ground. He only bought something down there in Hebron. New Testament. Do you know what happened here in New Testament? If I give you a hint of John 4, does that help you? Who did Jesus speak to in John 4? Samaritan woman. So this is, in New Testament time, this is in Samaria, these two mountains. They're north of Jerusalem, in Samaria. And something else here. And it has to do, the place has to do with the John 4 there. Where did Jesus speak with the Samaritan woman in Samaria? At Jacob's well. And that's right in here. Shechem goes by several different names. Sychar is another name. Nablus is a city that's not very far from Sychar, right in this valley here. Nablus is one name for it. Neapolis is another name that was given to it by Vespasian, the Roman emperor. And something else about Shechem here, back to the Old Testament. And we haven't gotten that far in our study. When the land was divided, the Israelites didn't have any land as the land, but they were given cities. So now you can guess what city Shechem was, a city of the Israelites. It was also a city of refuge. We're ahead of ourselves now in the Old Testament study. a lot of things happened here. And I meant to say that Jacob's well is right in there amongst those buildings. There today. And it's one of the most uncontested places of biblical times in all of Israel. Did that make sense? In other words, some of the places that Brian went to last November, well, I'm not sure if that's exactly where that happened. But Jacob's Well is one of the most uncontested places. I'm sure there's somebody that says, well, no, that wasn't really his well. But the Jacob's Well is 70-something feet deep, and they do have, as at all of the places, almost every place you find a biblical site, there's a building built over it. Kind of a, what do we call it? A memorial or shrine. That's the word I was looking for. You didn't go there, did you, Brian? You didn't go there.
Nope.
And so today it's kind of sad that they build stuff over it. When we were there, we went inside the building, and there's the well, and it's still got water in it, and it's still good water. The well is deep, someone scripture says. But anyway, so we drank out of Jacob's well. So some interesting geographical points. And Joshua and the people build the altar of Mount Ebal, and the people stand there listening to blessings over here, the people standing at the bottom of Mount Gerizim, and the curses over here. When they were read, as Moses had instructed them to do, and they follow the instructions that God gave to Moses. And so it's more or less, as this sheet says, number 5, it was a renewal of the covenant. Any question, any thought, any comment? I mentioned that Joseph was buried there. Yep.
So the Canaanites must not have been controlling that particular spot right there.
No. The city of Shechem probably had Canaanites in it, but they didn't control it in the sense that that Abraham and the other people, like Joshua now, didn't prevent them from going there. It wasn't a city of... like the Philistine cities, where they had a garrison city, a city that was had a wall around it. Most of the cities that Joshua and the people are now going into, as we already found from Jericho and Ai, most of the places where the battles take place are against cities that have a wall around them, a fortified place. And they've got to kick those people out, so to speak. But some of the open territory where there wasn't a fortified city, the Israelites were able to go into, like Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and so forth, whoever it was, could go through the land.
kind of comparing that to Hebron, where, like you said, Abraham did have some land there for burial.
The cave of Machpelah.
Caleb had to go and take that.
Yeah.
But here they
yeah.
gave him a place to read the blessings and the curses anyway.
Right. In Hebron or Hebron, as Brian mentioned, we'll be studying later. Caleb went in and took it as his possession, a part of his possession. That being the case, because it was a fortified city to some extent, and there were giants there. I had another thought there when Brian jigged my memory. Now I don't remember what it was. Okay, anything else on lesson 17? I hope that was interesting enough to you to see that what the, even though when you go there today and it looks like this, there's buildings, most of them are white, like you can see there, all over the place, you can at least get a feel for the mountains, the valley, and then maybe visualize from that here was a place that the people were in a valley, no buildings around to hinder them walking and so forth. Brian.
Demonstrates to me the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. Because they're going to read the blessings and the curses just like Moses told them to do. They're obeying Moses. And they've got the law laid out in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
But it gets down to that whole faith thing again and trust. And after Joshua's generation, I guess we could say these are going to be forgotten.
Yeah. That's the point I wanted
imagine
to
make.
Yeah, imagine that.
Humans forgetting.
That's what we pointed out at the beginning of our study of Joshua, that it's a book of whether or not the people had faith to be faithful to God. And Joshua's generation was a lot more faithful than the generation that Moses took out of Egypt. And we all know that, because that generation wandered in the wilderness because of their unfaithfulness for 40 years. So now we've got Joshua's generation, and they had the faith to get into the land and do as God said, kind of hit a bump there with Achan. And that'll be the case while Joshua is still alive. And they've heard the law read then to them. They didn't hear the generation that were there at Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim were not, unless they were, you know, younger, like Joshua. They didn't hear Moses when he spoke what he did in Deuteronomy. But this generation now is going to take in and possess the land. And as you all know, we get to it in the last chapter of Joshua. He warns them. As for me and my house, we'll serve Jehovah, but you choose who you serve. And they did choose. And that's what the book of Judges is about, that they failed to be like Joshua's generation, and time again, they had to appeal to God for a deliverer. But that's the book of Judges. Now, if you have lesson 18, I want to do two things, if possible, if our time allows it, and that is not look at paragraph 1, 2, how many are in 3, 4, 5? Well, 5 I might want. That's what I want. Anyway, the next thing is coming up. As the people are taking cities here, is the covenant with the Gibeonites. And I've gone back and forth as to whether or not to go ahead and study this text or to study what I'll tell you in just a moment. But the Gibeonites made a covenant with the Israelites, and they shouldn't have. And so that's part of the study. And then Number two here is chapter 10. That first section is chapter 9. Number two is chapter 10, and it's the defeat of the Amorite kings. And if I can go back here. No, it's later. Yeah. After they're up here at Mount Gerizim and Ebal, then they go down here, and these are the Amorite kings. And they're listed there in chapter 10. In fact, they're listed here on your sheet. There's five kings: Jerusalem, Hebron, Jarmuth, Lachish, and Eglon attacked the Gibeonites. The Gibeonites had made a covenant with the Israelites, so they call for help. And so Israel comes down and helps the comes out and helps the Gibeonite. Gibeon's here somewhere on that map. I don't see it right now. And so the Gibeonites, because of that covenant, call for Israel to come and help them. So the Israelites made a covenant, so they kept the covenant, and they went in and helped them. And so on the second page of this 18th lesson, it's the conquest of southern districts, and that's what this is all about. Section 2 there is the Amorite kings that went against the Gibeonites, and then section 3 is a conquest of this area, and there's six cities, I should say, that are listed there at the top of page 2. So there's a conquest of the southern districts, and then section 4 on lesson 18 is the conquest of the northern districts, and I don't have that map. It's in that slide somewhere, but I don't want to go back looking for it. So what I wanted to do this morning, even though maybe we better mention what passages. In this, I'm not going to turn to the passages. In this reading here in the 10th and the 11th chapters, they were to destroy the cities. They were to destroy the men, women, and children in the cities. And this has been brought up before, but in this 18th lesson, it's brought up again. And there is the bottom of page 2, a summary and a question of ethics. Joshua 11, verse 16 through 23, that's the verse that I was thinking of. While we're there, let's just go over there and read that. And so the question is brought up, well, how could God be a loving God if he would command them to, when they go into the land to possess it, that they destroy this city or they defeat that king or whatever, and then slaughter them all? Let's see, Joshua 11, verse 16, it says, did I want to read all those verses, 16 through 23? Might as well. Joshua 11, 16. So Joshua took all that land, the hill country, and the Negev, and the land of Goshen, and the lowland, and the Arabah, and the hill country of Israel, and its lowland, from Mount Halak, which rises toward Seir, as far as Baal-Gad, in the valley of Lebanon, below Mount Hermon. And he captured all their kings, and struck them, and put them to death. Joshua made war with war a long time with all those kings. There was not a city that made peace with the people of Israel except the Hivites, the inhabitants of Gibeon. And they took them all in battle. For it was the Lord's doing to harden their hearts that they should come against Israel in battle, in order that they should be devoted to destruction and should receive no mercy, but be destroyed, just as the Lord commanded Moses. So, when they took Ai, just backed up for a second, when they took Ai, finally, in the second try, what did they do with the king there and the people? We didn't really cover that much last week. But finally, when they took to the city of Ai, they killed all the people, and they took the king captive. But Joshua killed him and hung his body on a tree. That's kind of cruel, right? Killed all the inhabitants of Ai. And here it says that in that last verse, 26, Lord, that they should come against Israel in battle, these people that they're fighting, their hearts were hardened like Pharaoh. They come in battle in order that they should be devoted to destruction and receive no mercy, but be destroyed just as the Lord commanded Moses. So, the question is, down at the bottom of page 2, it's important to understand Joshua's full compliance with God's will regarding the conquest of Canaan. And there are some verses we just read. One of the chief tenets of premillennial doctrine is that God never fully gave Israel the land, and therefore the struggles of national Israel to reclaim their territory today are in fulfillment of prophecy. The following statements are from a well-known premillennial author. Now, that section is about whether or not the people took all the land that God had promised to them. The next section over on page 3, it's kind of what I was talking about. A question arises also when reading the total annihilation of the cities and the children. I want you to read the rest of that from there in the middle of page 3 and 4. And that's what we'll discuss next week, is what I was just talking about in Joshua 11, verse 16, and so on. As I said, the question came up some time ago. And so I know we can't take, we won't be able to take a look at it fully today, that second, about the taking of annihilating of the people. So I thought, well, this would probably be a little more understandable, but I don't, maybe not. Premillennialism is a hard word to say and a hard word sometimes to comprehend. So I thought we would talk about that today, and you'd have time then. Excuse me, I don't know what's going on. Time to read this rest of this 18th lesson next week, for next week. So I wanted to pause for these two things, and then we'll come back to the other points on page 1 of the 18th lesson. But now, you understand, and probably you've heard about it. A lot of us don't understand a whole lot about it. Premillennialism. The section down there, that paragraph on page 2, talks about a lot of people think that they didn't take the land that God, and so God still has to fulfill His promise to give them all of the land. The top of page 3 is a quotation from John Woolward, Armageddon, in his book, Armageddon, Oil, and the Middle East Crisis. This guy is a premillennialist, and he believes this, that God didn't give them all the land. So it is yet to be fulfilled for God to give them all the land. And without going in great detail, except what this guy says here, I don't know what the percentage is of religious bodies today. The people in them hold to premillennialism, that God is going to give them the land one of these days. And that's what Zionism, if you've heard of that today. And that's what the Orthodox Jews are still hoping for. The Messiah didn't come, but anyway, there are people that are already preparing. I think they've built some altars, and what else? And they've got the specs for the temple to be rebuilt in Jerusalem. When the time comes that Jesus comes back and he's going to be king in Jerusalem, and at that time, God's going to give them all of the land that he promised them. Now, that's oversimplifying what premillennialism is. Pre meaning before, millennial meaning 1,000. And so before the 1,000-year reign of Jesus, that's what's going to happen. But, Zionist is one word that they're called today, who think that that's going to happen. Why? Because back here, when Joshua and the people come into the land, and we haven't studied it all yet, I realize that. That's the first few points of lesson 18. When Joshua and the people went in, they did not conquer the whole land. And by the way, I have an article that's written by those fellows. What is it? The book? Let me see if I got it here. I don't think I... I saw this on a blog on the internet. Bible Project. Brian, I know, and some of you are familiar with that. They've written an article on conquering the promised land. And in that article, they're talking about the ethical question of it. But right now, we're talking about premillennialism. This, I don't know whether it'd be worth reading with you, but probably would. This guy, Walvoord, however you pronounce his name. They conquered Jericho and Ai. This is top page 3. And a large portion of the promised land. The hope of Israel had been partially fulfilled, he says, and the promise had been clearly restated. Yet the early conquest never reached into all the land that had been promised. This is the summation of this guy's premillennial thinking. Israel under Solomon controlled most of the land God had promised Abraham, but the land was never fully possessed in the italics, as you see, by the Jewish people. And this was clearly not the time land was to be claimed and kept in everlasting possession, talking about Joshua and the people. From the time of the promised Abraham to the present hour, the prophecies about Israel's total possession and the blessing in the land have not yet been fulfilled. Most dramatic events, however, are still ahead. Is the present return of Israel the beginning of the last and ultimate regathering of Israel? And he's talking about from 1948 and the coming back of the people. It's important to realize that after the time of the Gentile in, Israel will finally experience all that has been promised and hoped for since the time of Abraham. So that's brief, but again, it's kind of a capsule thought of how this fellow and others who are premillennialists think. Then there's this paragraph. But the inspired record says, as the Lord had commanded Moses, his servant, so Moses commanded Joshua, and so Joshua did. He left nothing undone of all that the Lord had commanded Moses. So Joshua took the whole land according to all that the Lord had said to Moses, and Joshua gave it as an inheritance to Israel. Joshua 11, verse 15 and 23. The fact that Israel will fail to fully exterminate all the inhabitants of Canaan does not constitute a shortfall of the promise to inherit the complete measure of the land. Remember, the reception of the land was an unconditional promise. Retaining the land was conditioned upon their continued obedience. And that's another subject we can get into.
Good point.
Yes. So the thought is, we're still looking for the Messiah to come and set up his kingdom, and we have a physical throne in Jerusalem and the physical temple in Jerusalem and so forth. Now, as he mentions in that last paragraph we just read, well, there were certain sections of the land that they didn't take. They didn't take every city. The Philistines were still there in the time of David.
That's right. Verse 22 of 11, Joshua 11, says that they still remain.
Some of them still remain in the land. And I think brought it up a couple of weeks ago, whenever, during the time of Solomon, the largest extent of the control of the Israelites was during the time of Solomon. It went all the way up to the Euphrates River, as God had promised. From the river of Egypt, that's not the Nile, but from the river of Egypt to Euphrates River, that's what God promised them. And so far as the control of the land, it was not controlled all that extent until the time of Solomon. But the question is, does that mean that they did not inherit the land, God did not give them all the land? And that's what the premillennials say, no, he did not. What say you? Ken, your hand first.
And
So you're saying that the land, they didn't conquer, they didn't control or have the whole land, and there's still a premillennial thoughts that they're going to get it later?
No, we have to switch into the spiritual. These things all happen for us to learn that we, mankind, are lost. We're without hope, without Christ.
I understand that that's our teaching, but that doesn't have anything to do with the physical occupation of the land. Physical occupation of the land. That's what these premillennials say never happened. And so it's got to happen later.
Well, that's where they're jumping off the track, because these things are to teach us, these physical things that we're studying are to teach us spiritual things. And the spiritual things came with Christ.
All of that, right, Ken, but that doesn't answer the question as to whether or not the children of Israel occupied, received God's promise of having the physical land. That doesn't answer that question.
It just proves that they failed.
No. If it proves that they failed, then it proves that they didn't occupy all of it, that they didn't receive all the inheritance.
They didn't fulfill what the promise required.
So we have a fulfillment yet, that they'll receive the physical land. That's the conclusion that I reached from what you just said. Let's go on to Mary's.
When Christ died.
Ken, we're going to go on to Mary's now. We don't have time to stay on that. Mary? But the question is, did God fulfill his promise to these Israelites then that he gave them the physical land, not the spiritual, the physical? If he didn't back then the premillennialists are right. Go ahead, Ted.
Yeah, I'm kind of confused on this, the idea of the premillennialists. That has to do with the so-called thousand-year reign of Christ on the earth, right? I mean, that would...
Some of it, yes.
Okay, so I don't really understand the connection there. I mean, what's that got to do with whether they had all the land or they didn't?
Well, they go to Revelation for that 1,000 years. And they're saying that when the people didn't receive all of the land, what's going to happen then is when Jesus comes back and when the 1,000-year reigns, then he's going to give them all of the land. They connect...
It never says he's ever going to... It says that he's going to reign for 1,000 years, but it doesn't say he's going to be on the earth doing that.
No, that's the whole thing about premillennialism, yes. We got Mo and then Laverne. That's the point.
And later on, Solomon finished the prophecy. They're going to take the river from the river Egypt to Euphrates. He had control. David even kept the kingdom spreading. And Solomon finally took it. But the point is, they had the land. They possessed it. The fact that they left people in the land was not... they controlled it, but they got complacent and let those people get a toehold, and later on became their
thorn in their side, right?
Because they didn't drive them all out.
That's the point that I've been trying to get us to see that Mo made right there. Joshua 11 verse 15 and 16, in the middle of page 3. Nothing left undone of the Lord had commanded Moses. So Joshua took the whole land according to all that the Lord had said to Moses. Joshua gave it inheritance to Israel. They possessed the land, finally, and Solomon's from the river of Egypt to the Euphrates River. But that didn't mean that they drove everybody out. They possessed it. God said, I'll give you that physical land, and he did. But when they didn't drive everybody out, then as maybe it was Moses said, that then there was a thorn in their side. Our time's getting away. I want to get to Laverne.
I'm really confused in all this.
Who isn't?
Who are these premillennialists that we're talking about today? Are they Jews?
No. They're people. Now the Jews think that that's their land, and they're going to possess it sometime. But premillennialists, for the most part, as far as my knowledge is concerned, are not Jews.
In other words, these premillennialists that have gone to giving them the land, that has nothing to do with them. I mean, like us; they're just Gentiles.
Yeah, but they think God didn't finish His promise there in Joshua the 11th chapter, and
that's
so.
Not their problem.
Yeah, so. So they say, and the whole premillennial theory is very involved, and you're not alone being confused about it. And but the point that we're trying to make was is the point that Mo made and get us to see that Joshua 11, verse 15 and 23 is not contradictory to what God did. Mary, our time's gone, so make it quick. I saw your hand up. Yeah.
But we went searching because we could see that the whole Bible is about Jesus. And all Jesus talked about was his European kingdom constantly, that he was setting up while he was here. He said he would do it. He did do it. And the whole Bible led to him, and it's about salvation through him.
All of that is contradictory to premillennialism, and that's one reason that I wanted to spend a little bit of time on it. The important thing, as Mary pointing out, and as Ken was pointing out, is that the spiritual kingdom of Christ was what was foreshadowed, and Christ came, and in the Gospels he said the kingdom of heaven is at hand, and when he went back to heaven, he's sitting on his throne in his kingdom. Well, thank you. Appreciate that. Next week, we'll look at the other part of lesson 18, and maybe we'll get into the first part of it. But anyway, appreciate your input, and we'll see what we can do next week.